We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, throws for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown.
This one is picked again. Intercepted by Boston.
Bridgewater, throw into the end zone. Touchdown!
Samuel, still on his feet, inside the five, to the end zone. Touchdown! What a play!
And it is caught for the touchdown by Moore. He is McCaffrey, and in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
He pounded on three! One, two, three!
He pounded!
And welcome to another episode of The Roar, brought to you by Blue Wire. My name is Billy Marshall, and unfortunately, my co-host John Ellis cannot be here tonight, so I will be recapping the Panthers' 25-17 loss over the Atlanta Falcons. This was a good opportunity to see how this coaching staff would deal with a short week, especially against an opponent they played a few weeks ago, which they had a success against. Unfortunately now for the Panthers, they were not able to capitalize on that because Atlanta, I mean, most observers would say this, thoroughly dominated this game despite the score being relatively close in the end. And let's get into it. Atlanta outgained Carolina by nearly 100 yards. I mean, the yards per play was pretty even, 5.9 to 5.8, but Carolina was aided by the Dante Jackson interception. And Jackson, despite having that interception, probably did not have one of his better games. The first two plays of the game, Atlanta gained 52 yards on easy receptions for Julio Jones, and both of those came against Dante, who should have done a better job of not only just matching up better, but driving hard on the ball so he could really make it difficult for Jones at the catch point. Usually, Jones will be favored in those situations, but you always want to give yourself a chance despite that. And so just regardless of what happened on those first few plays, Atlanta decided to kick a field goal on 4th and inches, which I found baffling. But to Carolina's credit, they were able to get the ball after the kickoff and score on Curtis Samuel 12-yard touchdown run. That's his second touchdown run of the week. And I think what you're seeing now is, especially under Joe Brady, they're using Samuel much more as a traditional running back. This wasn't always the case. If you remember in 2018 when Samuel had, you know, that crazy, there was a crazy statistic that he had in 2018 where he had like 4 touchdowns on like 12 touches or something insane. I can't remember the exact ratio, but most of his touchdowns back then came on reverses or swing passes and a little bit like a decoy in some way. But now you're seeing him used not only just as that decoy, who's able to get reverses and get upfield, but also as a running back too. So I thought it was a very good game for Curtis Samuel. And again, you're seeing his just his presence really help the team. And so, I mean, it was 7-3 at that point. And then again, Atlanta gets the ball back and they methodically go down the field. They face a 2nd and 8 from their own 44. And then they go again, deep middle of the field, Julio Jones, 20 yards, Dante Jackson on coverage again. I mean, it just became way too easy for Atlanta, especially in this first half. And then Carolina again held them to a field goal, made it 7-6. And then a couple of drives later, the Panthers get the interception and a really nice flea flicker touchdown to Curtis Samuel. The throw I thought was even more impressive, probably Bridgewater's best throw of the game. And then from there, it was 14-6, but as soon as that happened, I just felt like Atlanta just took over the game. And I mean, it wasn't really encouraging just to see the defense get completely like flat on their foot for the pretty much in the run game and in the pass game. I mean, Todd Gurley, he certainly didn't have as good of a game as he had in Atlanta, but Brian Hill nearly rushed for 5 yards of carry. And he was just finding openings. And let's not get into Matt Ryan. He had 27 yards rushing, and he obviously scored that scrambled TD. So, you know, after that, the second half was pretty interesting. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater did get injured on a pretty dirty hit, I'm mad at. I mean, there was really no reason for Dante Fowler and Charles Harris to, you know, pull off that kind of ridiculous those hits. I mean, I'm glad they got disqualified, but both of those players should at least face some type of fine or suspension. You know, PJ Walker, he came in and, yeah, I mean, he certainly put a lot of juice behind his throws, you know, which is surprising. You look at him on the field, he looks just so skinny and scrawny, but, you know, that led to a Carolina field goal. At that point, they made the score 19-17. There you go. Yep, 19-17. So they made the score 19-17. Atlanta gets the ball back. They go on a pretty long drive, and they were just able to run the ball, essentially, at this point. I mean, Gurley for 3 yards, Matt Ryan for 10 yards, Hill for 14 yards, Gurley for 4 yards. I mean, their longest play on this drive was a 12-yard throw to Hayden Hurst. So again, it was just methodical from Atlanta. And Dirk Cutter is not the most, or excuse me, yes, Dirk Cutter, their offensive coordinator, is not the most exciting coordinator, and you hear a lot of complaints from Atlanta fans about him. But it just became so easy. And we'll get into this a little later, but just Carolina's defensive line just getting dominated at the point of attack was just poor. And I don't think it was an issue in the previous weeks. For some reason, I think it's just happening now, and I'm curious to see why that's the case. So Carolina does get the ball back. Atlanta has a pretty decent drive from about 8 minutes to 3 minutes. They take about 5 minutes off the clock. Carolina gets the ball about 2:58, and they really did not do well getting up the field. There was a lot of checkdowns and intermediate throws. This, coincidentally, this drive had the first targets for DJ Moore. He caught two of them, the first being the 13-yard out route that he caught. Then he caught the 42-yard deep ball, which was underthrown. But Moore made a nice adjustment. So, I mean, it was nice to see him on the stat sheet. And then, obviously, the other two targets came at the end of that drive, where there was an incompletion to Moore, and then the interception was a target towards him too, which I'm not sure what Teddy saw there, but not a great throw. Probably his worst throw than that. I thought Teddy Bridgewater was fine in this game. I mean, he wasn't spectacular. You know, I'm sure the injury had something to do with it as well. But, I mean, it was an okay game for Bridgewater. I mean, certainly the week previous to this, he played much better. And I want to get into this now with the offense. There does seem to be a lot of blame being passed around with the amount of pressure Atlanta was able to get. And this is a little bit concerning from a couple of different reasons, okay? The first reason is that Atlanta's pass rush is not very good, especially because McKinley didn't even play. And on top of that, you had Charles Harris, one of their guys, I believe Harris is the one who got ejected. If I'm not, then it was Fowler. One of those two got ejected. So Atlanta's already down a few defensive players. And I totally get that Grady Jarrett is a monster. But I think Carolina's offensive line, pound for pound, should not be having issues with that level of competition. And a few guys, Taylor Moton, I've been singing his praises all season. He didn't have a great game in pass protection. He did allow three pressures. I think we saw the rotation at left tackle between Trent Scott and Greg Little. I think Greg Little at this point should not play again. And I mean, he only played 23 snaps. Scott played 31. Little in 23 snaps gave up two hurries, and his pass block grade, according to Pro Football Focus, was 12.7. And I've made my point about Chris Reed. There's really not much else I can say about him. John Miller, he probably had the better game out of anyone. I mean, Trent Scott did. He looked good, so I'll give him credit for that. And this is what I was alluding to a little bit earlier. I see a lot of people just blaming Matt Paradis for a lot of the issues that occurred, because a lot of those blitzes that they brought to Atlanta, they're all just A-gap pressures with their linebackers, Deion Jones or the other linebackers, and everyone just for some reason decided to blame Paradis. And I don't think Paradis played great. I mean, 64.8 pass blocking grade is nothing to write home about, but I think it's a larger discussion about who deserves blame on the offensive line. And I saw just a lot of tweets and complaints after the game that, oh, Carolina, they better invest this much money into their offensive line and this many draft picks. I just don't think it's that simple, because a few of the sacks, first of all, are not only on the quarterback, but also on the running back. And Mike Davis was not good in pass protection, and he usually is. So that was a little discouraging. And Jeff Schwartz, former offensive lineman in the NFL, and now does a really good job on Twitter. One of the sacks was actually Teddy Bridgewater's fault, because he didn't identify one of the oncoming blitzers that Mike Davis or one of the tight ends to block. And then another one, I believe he pointed out, was because of one of the safeties or corners coming on the blitz, Bridgewater should realize that he has a hot route, which he did, but he decided to hold on to the ball. And there's an analytics saying that's been percolating for the past couple of years that sacks are a QB stat, and I think I agree with it, especially because it's not like Bridgewater didn't have time to throw the ball in this game, because he did, and that's a little bit concerning, I guess. Overall, I thought he threw the ball fine. I mean, it wasn't one of his better games at all. I mean, he was average for the most part, but I think the issue now becomes, how do we deal with, how does the protection hold up? And it's not just on the talent of the offensive line. Sure, I would love to have an offensive line that featured 5 first-round picks, but that's just not feasible in the modern NFL. So what needs to be done now is the coaching and the schematic issues that's arising really needs to be correct, and we saw it occur against the Saints too. So hopefully, leading up to this week against the Chiefs and beyond, they really put in a protection scheme that communication is there, the quarterback is finding his hot route quickly, the running backs are doing their job in pass protection, and the communication just becomes a lot more efficient. And I mean, this shouldn't be happening, especially in a situation where you're playing with essentially no fans. I mean, if this was New Orleans in 2019 in the Superdome, where it's 80,000 fans, then sure, I can understand some of those communication issues, but not in 2020, where there's barely anyone in the stadium. Now, just moving across the offense, a few people after the game, they made some comments about DJ Moore and Teddy Bridgewater, and they were essentially saying that DJ didn't deserve to feel left out by Bridgewater. And again, I'm not sure I entertain that. I just think that the coverage that Atlanta showed towards Moore was a lot more respect. And again, we have to remember the previous week against the Saints, DJ essentially went off. So I'm not sure it's anything personal with Bridgewater not targeting DJ. I just thought Atlanta did a pretty decent job. AJ Terrell had a good game for them. And Samuel, he was the one getting open. Robbie Anderson, we know he can get open. And so I'll have to go back and watch the All-22 again. I've seen bits and pieces here and there, but I mean, I thought Samuel and Moore were pretty good. And Ian Thomas, he had a pretty good game, especially catching the ball. Certainly one of his more productive games. And you know, as far as the other skilled players go, Mike Davis, I thought he had a relatively fine game. I mean, nothing too crazy. 13 carries for 66 yards, pretty efficient. And he did have, you know, one reception for 11 yards. And I would like to see, probably I would have liked to see more, you know, schematic targets towards the running backs, whether it's like a Texas route, you know, a wheel route, you know, flare route, something to get them involved. So, I mean, it was a mediocre day for the offense, especially against a defense in Atlanta that's not very good. And again, I'm not sure how much of that is attributed to just the Thursday night game, the short week, just everything being out of sync, and how much credit Atlanta deserves. And I mean, Atlanta's defense, they have played a little stingier recently since they made the coaching change. So maybe they deserve a little credit, but still, I thought Carolina really should have done better. And I get it, the conditions weren't great, and Bridgewater missed a little time, but I mean, you're going to face adversity, and you have to do better. But I think notwithstanding, the biggest issue in that game was Carolina's defense. And I mean, this is the second week in a row where the defense just really just, I mean, they should not be playing this poorly, in my opinion. And, you know, the interesting thing is, after maybe the Chargers game or the Cardinals game, I don't know. I just felt like there was a time, maybe like late September, where Carolina's defense was trending upwards. And maybe it's just because they didn't play anyone good. That could be the case. But in this game in particular, it just, I'm not even sure what to say. It was a combination of individual breakdowns, a combination of just schematic issues. And again, I mentioned this last week, I do feel sorry for Phil Snow, because the talent level right now on the defense is not very good. It just isn't. Now, how much say and responsibility does he have for that, or the other coaches versus the personnel directors at GM? I don't know. But I mean, Brian Burns and Jeremy Chinn, they had really good games. Stanley Thomas Oliver, the seventh rounder who played 15 snaps, graded really well. Efe Obada had another good game. My issues, again, with this run defense was the interior. Derek Brown did not play that great this week. I mean, his overall performance level, I think, should be below average for what a top 10 pick should be performing at. You know, coincidentally, he did play better than I thought as a pass rusher this week, so I'll give him credit for that. But his run defense was not good. And again, it starts with the line of scrimmage and run defense. And I get it, the Panthers were missing Zach Kerr, so they were, I mean, they certainly needed the reinforcements. The linebackers didn't really have a great game. Shaq probably had one of his worst games of this season. And then, but I was actually encouraged by Jeremy Chinn. I know, like, earlier in the day, the NFL awarded him Defensive Rookie of the Month, which I did not really agree with. You know, I've voiced some of my concerns with him. A lot of my issues with Chinn are to deal with how he does in coverage. So a lot of those tackles that he's getting are mainly down the field, you know, deep in coverage after he allows, like, a 15 and 20-yard reception. But I can't really, you know, dislike his performance. He was the best graded player on defense according to Pro Football Focus. His pass rushing grade was really high. He came on a few blitzes that really affected Matt Ryan, and then his coverage I thought was the best of the season. So this game, he definitely deserved the hype. And again, I'm really hoping that consistency becomes a factor with him. And like I mentioned earlier, Burns, not a good game from him. What else can you say? I mean, that spin sack that he had that was negated because of a holding was really unfortunate, because it was just such a beautiful move. I mean, he sets up with a speed rush and immediately like comes back inside to sack Matt Ryan, but it was negated because of a penalty, which was unfortunate. So, I mean, overall, this defense, it has a lot of work to do. And at 3-5, I think we have a good idea of what this team is. And they're a team that's average to below average. And looking at their upcoming schedule, I feel like they'll be competitive in these games against Tampa and Kansas City and Detroit too. And they might win again 3 or 4 of these games, finish a 6-10, 7-9 record, but the talent level just has to improve. I mean, Troy Pride, I liked him as a prospect, but he's really, really struggling out there. I mean, we've said all we have to say about Tahir Whitehead and Dante Jackson. Really, I don't know. Like, he's had a pretty good, an okay season. I mean, certainly played well against Chicago, but last week it just wasn't really encouraging. And so it's going to be interesting to see what this team does for the remainder of the season. The reintegration of McCaffrey will be helpful to this team. I mean, they really, really need it. And I mean, but defensively right now, this team has to get better. Shaq Thompson's been okay, but the linebackers in general need a talent upgrade. So I'll be curious to see if Russell Douglas will return. It looks like he was on the COVID list, so hopefully, he's able to get healthy, because they just need the depth. I mean, guys like Troy Pride, he's a 4th-round rookie for a reason. He should be developing and watching how this team performs before he gets an opportunity to just go out there and start guarding guys like Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones. But I think this is where we expected Carolina to be. And a lot of people were upset about that game. I wasn't nearly as upset. I think my expectations for this team are pretty even-keeled. And I think that if you accept that what this team is, it's a young team that's rising in development. Their development's not necessarily linear, but it's potentially improving throughout the season. Then you'll kind of get a better sense of how to appreciate them, as opposed to just getting stressed out over, wins and losses. And I get it. Losing to Atlanta, no one's ever going to like losing to them. But I mean, you have a rookie coaching staff too, and they're also learning on the job. So 3-5, a game against Kansas City this upcoming Sunday. I know it looks daunting from the outside, but just a few weeks ago, no one gave Oakland a chance. I mean, they were 12.5-point favorites and they went in there and won outright. Now, I'm not expecting Carolina to do the same thing, but I think with McCaffrey back, they can potentially control the line of scrimmage, control the game, keep the ball away from Mahomes, and maybe just keep it close. But I mean, the way the defense is playing, I mean, I don't know. Kansas City could score in like 2 to 3 plays each time. But that's going to do it for this episode. And we will have a Chiefs preview for you, hopefully this Thursday. And as I conclude this episode, I just want to tell everyone, I mean, tomorrow is election day, so please use your voice to go out and vote if you haven't already. Elections, they come and go, and this is your one opportunity to really voice how you feel about what directions you want to change or keep within your local, state, and obviously at the federal level too. So take advantage of that, go out and vote, and we'll have a preview for you on Thursday for this upcoming week's opponent, the Kansas City Chiefs. Thank you, and you have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.